Welcome to the Liz Roberta Show, the podcast for women who are building their empire online and manifesting their ultimate dream life. You'll learn the secrets to success so you can experience freedom and total alignment with your soul gifts. I left my corporate career behind and went full-time in my business after feeling lost for years, not knowing what to do. I got a book deal with my dream publisher, Hay House, which is when my book, Living in Tune, was born. I help soulful business owners to have their next big breakthrough, and I blend magic and marketing for a feminine approach to business that's aligned, heart-led, and full of soul. Are you ready to devote yourself to your calling and make more money than you ever thought possible? If so, let's go. Hello, I'm back. It has been quite the hiatus, and there are reasons. I'm going to do a brief update before we begin and get into the juicy stuff, the big news. But I'm really grateful to you for being here and for bearing with me. I did not expect to take such a big break from the podcast. I was really busy in 2023. At the end of the year, I was creating Spiritual Business Bootcamp. And if you've been in one of my programs, they're detailed. There's a lot in there. There are trainings, hypnoses, healings, workbooks, and it is detailed, partly due to my autism, which we'll get onto. So I was in that deep creation process for months, making that program as good as it could possibly be, while also running my membership, also running Spiritual Coaching Academy, also serving one-to-one clients, creating content. So I just decided that I would take a small break from the podcast. I would have Christmas off and then I would return. What I didn't expect was to have a huge tower moment over Christmas, which knocked me out for months, along with a few other pieces that came along, hence why I am returning to the microphone now. And let me just fill you in on what happened. So Christmas, I was like, excellent. I am stepping away. I'm taking a break. We went to Ali's parents for a week. Then we went to mine in Poole for a week. And it was just so much travel, so much family time. I'd also started redoing my website at this point. So if you haven't been to LizRoberta.com recently, there is a whole new website and it is literally my ultimate dream website. It's perfect. I finished it this morning because I've got over 100 blogs on there. So I went back through all of them, made sure the links were up to date. I was happy with all of them. So that process took a while. Obviously, redoing the whole thing, there were so many issues I can't even tell you. So I had to go back and forth with support again and again. But finally, everything is perfect. And I'm so happy with it. So if you haven't been to the website recently, go and have a peek. It is looking fabulous. And it's taken months to get it to this point. So that's also something I've been working on in the background. And I thought I would do that over Christmas. Lol. I thought it would take like 2 weeks. Ended up being more like 3.5 months, actually, maybe closer to 4 months, 4 months, much longer than I expected. And also, it was over Christmas that I had the big awakening, another big awakening. And this time, it was realizing that I may have autism. So to give you the backstory, I always wondered, and I did a Q&A on my Instagram stories. If you don't follow me on Instagram, it's at I Am Liz Roberta, and I did a Q&A on there, so you may have already seen me talk about this, but I always wondered, especially through my 20s. Before then, I mean, I just had no idea, but when I was in my 20s, I really started to realize that I was having a different experience to the people around me, that other people found certain things easier than I did. For example, when I would go on holidays with my friends, I used to go to Zante and Magaluf and different holidays like that with groups of friends. And I would be the only person that would need to leave at 3 p.m. and go to the room for an hour or two on my own. No one else had to do that. They could go out all night, spend all day together and never ever need that alone time. But every single day I would have to sneak back to the room on my own. And that was kind of the experience I would have through my 20s. And when I had my big spiritual awakening in 2016, that definitely exacerbated everything. I became so much more sensitive than I'd ever been before. Alcohol suddenly became really toxic to me. I started passing out if I drank alcohol, not because I was so drunk, but just because it became really toxic to me. So that really changed my social life as well. And it basically just kept bringing me back to this question of, why do I have this extreme sensitivity that other people don't seem to have? And over Christmas, when I wasn't in my own home, I wasn't eating at my normal times because I eat at the same times every day. I eat the same foods every day apart from dinner, which I have with Ali. So we have a different dinner every night. And I can change that routine for a day or two. But having it completely thrown out for 2 weeks and being in other people's houses where I couldn't control the lighting, especially the lighting, like watching things in the evening with the overhead light on was just driving me insane. Like when we watch things at home, I get up and down, I'm like a jack in the box 10 times. I need to change the volume, change the lighting, and I have to adjust everything until it's perfect in quotation marks, which means it just feels right enough that I can settle. And I think part of that is the need for like perfection and for things to feel right and to click into place, but also just the sensitivity to volume and to sound. And obviously being with people the whole time over Christmas was really challenging too. And it just came to a head. And Ali and I were bickering about it. And he was like, what is up with you? And I was being crabby, which is how I get if I feel really overwhelmed for a long period of time. Or if I'm having to do a lot of small talk, you know, I can do a little bit, but eventually my patience just really starts to wear thin. And this was how I was feeling. And I again crept upstairs on my own. And I was like, there's got to be something here. But when I had looked at autism previously, because I had Googled it throughout my 20s, and then I'd always step back because it said things like not being able to understand comedy or not being able to flow with the back and forth of a conversation, being socially awkward, these kind of traits. And I was like, well, that's not me. I've always had big groups of friends. I can socialize. I don't always like it, but I can do it. I can have a conversation. You can hear me now. I can talk fine. So it just never added up. But it came to this boiling point at Christmas. And so I went upstairs and I Googled, do I have autism? I looked at the search results and I saw a test called the RADS. And this is a test for adults who have a subclinical level presentation, meaning it's not obvious. Now, it doesn't give you a diagnosis. You have to go through a whole diagnosis process, which I'm going to talk about, but it's just an indicator. And I'd never done anything like this before because I'd always been put off by the stereotype of autism, which is based on men. And so I did this test. And I set the intention that I was just going to completely open up and just be honest. No one in the world knew that I was doing this. So it was just for me. So I didn't have to pretend or change my answers or try and prove anything. It was just for me and my own curiosity in secret. So I thought to myself, right, I'm going to be 100% honest here. And I just want to freaking know. I did the test. It was about 20 minutes long. And then I got 106. And the threshold for autism is 65. Now, it's not entirely accurate, but it's 97% accurate. That's what it said to me when I got the result. And it said there's basically a 97% chance that you are. Now, you can imagine the tower moment this created within me. I then had to go back downstairs and rejoin everyone as though nothing had happened. Meanwhile, my world had just been shaken. I told Ali later that night, and I was really scared to tell him because I knew what he would say. And he said, absolutely not. I don't think you have it. My best friend since year two, who is my maid of honor, she actually did the observation part of my diagnosis process. She also said, absolutely not, I don't think you do. My mother also said, I don't think you do. And I think this is so important to share because it really goes to show how hidden autism can be in women. And this is why I've been sharing about it. It's of no benefit to me. I actually have a slight worry that maybe I'm damaging my business. I don't even know, or turning some people away, like who knows. But I think it's so important to teach people about this. People do not know the difference in autism when it's in women. And it stopped me from getting diagnosed and having that absolute peace and freedom for over a decade. It's not as obvious. And the people closest to you in the world may not even know. So it can really be something that is happening beneath the surface. And that was absolutely my experience. So Ali was like, no, I don't think you do. Again, because he was doing what I did and comparing it to the male characteristics of autism and the male stereotype, not knowing, like I didn't used to, that it's much more of an internal experience that no one else can see. However, I have previously had other mental health issues. I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder in 2011. I went on antidepressants and beta blockers for anxiety, previously had depression and eating disorders. All of these are very, very common in women with autism. So Ali said, okay, I don't think you do, but let's see about getting diagnosed. Like, he's very grounded. I'm more the one that is like, well, you know, if you know, you don't need people to prove it for you, don't need any external validation. But he said, let's get a diagnosis. And I was like, okay, fine. So after Christmas was over and we were back home, I started researching, okay, how do I get an assessment? Now, to give some more context to this, I have also been on a whole gluten journey thing that took almost a year to come to its completion, and that was through the NHS. So that was one reason I didn't want to go through the NHS, because it took so long and there were multiple mistakes along the way as well. Like, my blood was tested for the wrong thing, and so I had to start eating gluten again to get my blood done again, which is a horrible experience when you're intolerant and you have to eat it. Like, it was horrible, and I had to do that because they messed the bloods up. They messed something else up as well, and they put me in for a shoulder x-ray instead of an endoscopy. So I was just like, I'm not doing all of this again. I literally just had this experience. So that was one thing that informed my decision making. The next was knowing that if I went to a GP, they would meet me and talk to me and go, I don't think you've got autism, because if you met me, you wouldn't think that I do either. So I decided to do self-referral, but I wanted to make sure that it was a full diagnosis, something that no one could ever contest. And I'm not planning on going on benefits, but there is some entitlement when you have an official diagnosis. It's also been sent to my GP, so I used a centre that the NHS uses, so it's all very much linked. However, you can go through the NHS and the NHS will pay for your assessment, or you can do self-referral and you have to pay for your own assessment. So obviously a very fortunate position to be in that I could pay. So yeah, it was an investment for my own clarity, and the whole process took about 3 months. So the first part of the process is obviously contacting them. They sent me through a bunch of forms, which I had to fill out. And as I was filling out these forms, I was like, oh my goodness, okay, this is really coming to light here. Because for example, I went to Marbella with my mum in January. And as soon as we landed and got in the taxi from the airport, I could feel the air pressure pushing down on my head. And again, this is one of those times where I'm thinking, I don't think anyone else is experiencing this. Can they not feel the pressure and the clouds and the changes in the atmosphere? I can feel those things. And a side note to this, I also very much think it's linked to my seasonal affective disorder, which is another reason I had to have a break from the podcast, because my seasonal affective disorder was so bad. And so if I don't get sunshine for an extended period of time, I go into full clinical depression. And it's not like, oh, it's grey skies, I feel glum. And it's not a lifestyle choice like, oh, I want to live somewhere sunny. It's like, no, I'm going to be crying and not able to exercise and literally just wondering if I'm going to be able to make it through the day. And so again, this is one of those things that made me think, why is my reaction so much more intense than other people who may just be a bit glum or a bit bummed that it's been grey for 2 months, and yet I'm here crying for 4 hours a day and having slow movement and not being able to exercise and my spirit is completely broken. Like, why is my reaction so much more intense? And I knew that it was probably linked to having an autistic brain. On the flip side, I do also feel really euphoric when there's sunlight or like good lights or Christmas lights. And my friend, bless her, I told her about this and she was like, yes, because we went somewhere at Christmas time and she was like, you would not stop going on about the lights, the lights, the lights, the lights. Like, I love fairy lights, Christmas lights. So it's a double-edged sword. I love sunshine. I love fairy lights. Light makes me so happy. But then also the reverse is true. So this was another thing, and it's stuff like that that I was writing on these intake forms thinking, oh my goodness, I must have this. And so I sent those off. There were also some online tests to do as well. And then they came back and said, okay, we've examined them. The clinical team has examined them. And we do think there's enough here to warrant an assessment. So they don't give everyone an assessment. You have to pass the initial screening. Then you have to have observers. So I had my husband and my best friend since year two, who also then had to do questionnaires and tests, but based on me and how I act in different situations and their memories of me and things like that. Then I had a telephone interview and she called me on the phone at an arranged time. It was a clinical psychiatrist and we did a half an hour phone interview, which I was extremely overwhelmed by. And I did not expect it to be so emotional. I didn't expect the whole process to be so emotional. But it was stuff that I hadn't talked about for 31 years. And I think just starting to talk about it brought so much up. So many deep layers and even generational stuff. The pain that it's caused in my life and in my family for all the people who aren't diagnosed, because I do very much see it in my paternal lineage. And it's much more clear with the men, which is another reason that I thought I may have it, because I can clearly see it in the men in my family. And so that's another reason I thought I had it as well, because it would make sense for it to be in my genes, but obviously it presents very differently in me as a woman. So I did the telephone assessment, was very overwhelmed. Ali and I always joke about it now because she said, can I just confirm your name? And I burst into tears and went, I'm so overwhelmed. And she'd literally just asked me to confirm my name. Like, we had not started and already I was overwhelmed. So we always joke about that now. Got through the phone interview. Then I had to travel across the country for my assessment day. And this is in person. I was so nervous, but I decided to make it into a fun trip. So I enjoyed the train ride. I went through London, stayed in a hotel, and just tried to make it into a nice, fun trip away on my own. And when the assessment center happened, I thought it was just with one clinical psychiatrist. Walked into the room, there was another one there. Don't you hate that? When people book in a meeting and then they add on extra people that you don't know about. So that threw me off, but they were super nice. Both clinical psychiatrists. I'd looked up the main one beforehand. She'd worked in autism for 10 years, previously been with the NHS, just a very long, decorated career as a clinical psychiatrist. And they were both women, which was absolutely amazing. And when I was choosing my assessment center, this is one of the specific things that I was looking out for. In the FAQs, I was looking for somewhere that knew about autism in women specifically, because I didn't want them to put me in that stereotype of, oh, well, you're not socially awkward, so you can't have autism. And by this point, I'd done so much research online, read probably everything you can possibly read about autism in women, And so I wanted to make sure that the centre I went with knew about it too and wasn't just going to write me off because it's not super obvious externally. And so I was in the room with two women. I was there for 3 hours. It was intense. And they asked questions about my childhood, work, what I enjoy, what I'm interested in, my response to things. It did feel a bit like a grilling and I was very overwhelmed at first, but they were so good at knowing what to say and knowing how to calm me down. And it really was a safe space, which was great. And then they sent me out of the room to confer, which is, again, not a nice feeling when you're outside waiting for people to determine your fate and you know they're talking about you and judging you and analyzing you. They called me back in. And then the first words she said were, "I'm going to give you a diagnosis." And there was a pause, like a game show. And I thought, is she going to give me a diagnosis of not having autism? And then she said, of autism. And in that moment, it was like a key had been put into me and turned. And something had been unlocked. And all of these layers just came lifting off. When I walked out of that assessment center, I felt so light. I could have just drifted off in this ethereal mist. And it was like so many layers of shame, of fear, of masking, of trying to cover up, of trying to fit in, of trying to keep up, of trying to be like everyone else, were all just lifted. And not just for me, but for my lineage as well, because I'm the first person in my family who has gone for a diagnosis. I don't even know if the other members of my family realize that they have autism, even though it's obvious to me. And so I walked out of that assessment center and I was expecting beforehand to feel overwhelmed and to want to cry. And it was the total opposite. I felt elated. I felt true freedom. And as I said on the Instagram post that I shared a few days after, it wasn't that I was living my dream life. I felt that before. It wasn't like I was in this film, in this movie moment. I felt like that before. It was freedom. It was the purest feeling of freedom I have ever felt so far in my life. Which is really interesting for me to say because, again, as I said before, I'm not generally someone who cares for diagnosis. I think if you know, then you know, and no one knows your internal experience and no one knows you better than you. So I was really pleasantly surprised to experience the diagnosis process and for it to be so profoundly healing. And that's another reason I want to talk about it, because I just would never have expected it to be the massive gift that it was to be diagnosed. And ever since then, I have been integrating. I was terrified to come out and talk about it to the wider world, to my community. When I left the assessment center, I obviously called Ali and he was so excited and happy for me because he knew how much it meant to me. I then told a handful of friends who knew I was going for the assessment, and these friends have all been diagnosed with ADHD or autism or are going through the diagnosis process. So I told them, we celebrated. People were saying things like, welcome to the first day of the rest of your life, welcome to freedom, like they just totally, totally got it. And you just can never know what that feeling of freedom is until you get a diagnosis for something like this. And it just alleviated so much energy and so much pressure from me. And I even found myself not long after, I was writing a message and I noticed that I was doing my usual thing that I'd been used to doing of trying to figure out how it would be received. Would the other person understand what I'm saying? Because I was making a joke, but I was trying to analyze, okay, how is this going to come off? Is it going to accidentally offend them? Is it going to make sense? Are they going to think it's funny? And I was doing this kind of mental arithmetic. And then I was like, wait, this friend knows I've got autism now. We've talked about it. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if people think I'm weird or quirky. I don't have to cover it up. If it doesn't make sense or doesn't come off perfectly, then whoops. Like, it's just a mistake, but at least they'll know why. Whereas before, and I think my whole life without even realizing, I expended so much energy trying to cover it up or trying to fit in or trying to keep up or be the same. Whereas now it's like just being unleashed and letting all of that quirkiness out because I don't need to cover it up for anyone. Getting a diagnosis has been the most liberating and freeing thing I could ever have imagined. And I did not expect this to happen. So you're probably wondering, why did you think you had autism? Because I mentioned some of the pieces from Christmas, but I wrote a really long list of things from childhood, things from adulthood, and I thought I would touch on a few of those. Now, this list is extensive, so I'm not going to go through every single thing, but there were clues. And if you are curious for yourself or you're going to go through the diagnosis process yourself, then I definitely recommend doing this and writing a list, a note on your phone. Because once you open up this door of possibility, all these memories will come back to you. And you'll go, oh, and that was that time. And there was that time. And so having that note on your phone just allows you to catch all of them so that you can use that information when you're doing your forms and you're going through your interviews. So one thing for me was when I was younger, I was really passionate about animals. Really, really, really passionate. So I always wanted to be a vet. I would order leaflets from Peter, and then I would put them through every letterbox in my neighborhood. I would put posters on lampposts with sellotape, and I would just do this on my own. I was the most driven, strange little girl ever. I didn't need to be with other people. I would just be on it. I would be on a mission. If I had a project, that was it. And so I would be on this animal rescue mission. I also had a room of animals in my house called the Animal Kingdom, where I'd have 3 mice, 2 rats, 2 gerbils, a Syrian hamster, just all these different rodents. And my life revolved around animals. And at the weekend, I would cycle to pet shops just to look around and obviously buy things for my pets. I'd collect all the different leaflets. One of the things that I took to the assessment was, well, I took a video of it because I couldn't carry it on the train, but these folders I have from childhood where I'd file all of these animal leaflets that I'd taken from the shops. And it was so funny because there were sections for cats. I never had a cat, and fish, and it would be like flea treatments and how to look after them and how to feed them and all these things. And I was just obsessed with animals, and especially helping animals and rescuing and saving animals and trying to make life better for animals. And so part of this is the fact that it was a special interest, but autistic people are often very driven by justice and very connected to animals in a deep, deep way. And this was a big clue. So my obsessive nature meant that I was just really into animal rights, animal justice. And if there was ever anything on TV where an animal was killed or died, I would be devastated, which I now know is a meltdown, and I would be inconsolable, floods of tears. I'd have to get taken out of the room, and I was just really, really sensitive. I was also really organized as a kid. My favorite day at school was the last day of term when we would do organizing and we would file things away. I loved files, I loved folders, I loved organizing. Any project that I did, I would do the best freaking project possible. I did a project on rivers, and I remember that we had to mark each other's. It was in year 6, and I remember giving it to my friend Kat, and she said, "There's just too much. There's too much here." And I ended up getting an A++ for that project on rivers, because if I'm doing a project, then I am going to find out every single thing that can possibly go in that project. And I just love learning. I love researching. And so in school, I always wanted to be the best of the best. I remember I did a spelling test again in year 6. I think I got like 18 out of 20, and I was like, right, that's it. I'm reading the dictionary. I'm going to get 20 out of 20. And I always just had that kind of attitude when we were doing any kind of group work or the school nativity, I would be the narrator or the scribe, always in this organizational type of role. I was a deep thinker and just always on the go, always on a mission, always working on a project. Another little thing as well that I have, which not all autistic people have, all autistic people are completely different. For me, I can't read fiction. The only fiction I've ever read has been in school. As an adult, fiction is never what I would choose to read. I don't enjoy it, and I really struggle to follow it. Recently, Ali put on an audiobook in the car that was fiction, and I was like, you're going to have to turn this off. I can't do it. And I really tried, but there's just something about it. I don't know if it's the different storylines going on at once or the characters. I don't know. It just does not work for me at all. And that can also be an autistic trait, not reading fiction. And so for me, I only ever read nonfiction, and that's always been the case. And obviously in school, I'd have to read fiction for exams and the curriculum. But outside of that, I only read nonfiction. And I was just a really sensitive little child. We moved towns when I was in year two, and it was devastating for me. Absolutely devastating. I think the change, the upheaval, the sensitivity, I remember the feeling of dread in my stomach every morning going to a whole new school and just crying, and then the teacher saying, oh, stop crying. And I was just like, oh God, I'm just so devastated. I was just so, so sensitive. And really didn't like change and uncertainty. I have a really young memory from when I was maybe three of going to the fireworks and my uncle carrying me, and I was screaming and crying with my hands over my ears because it was so loud and so unpleasant to me as a small child. And I remember my best friend's mum describing me as guarded. So my friend told me that her mum had mentioned that I was guarded, and I don't mean to be guarded. And other people have said that throughout my life. I said this to my husband the other week, and he was like, well, you are guarded when we're with other people. I don't mean to be. It's just that I'm can be closed off, I think, because of my sensitivity. It can be very vulnerable to have autism because you are so sensitive and because you are such a deep feeler and such a deep thinker that you don't let everyone in right away. And so these were things that I had even when I was a young, young child. When I got to adulthood, as I mentioned, I had an anxiety disorder that was really, really tough. Anyone who's had an anxiety disorder knows how devastating it is. When I went to the doctor, it's because I had all these physical symptoms. I had headaches every single day, all day. I had insomnia. I would wake up in the night like a volcano, just so incredibly hot. I had these awful, vivid nightmares. I had heart palpitations. So when I went to the doctor, I thought it was a physical problem. I did not expect to be diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. But it's because I was so out of tune with who I really was and the way that I work best, which is working on something that's deeply meaningful for me, that I'm interested in, that's a special interest, and being able to work from home and be comfortable and not be overstimulated by having lots of noise and the telephone. Being interrupted is something I cannot stand. I work best when I'm in flow. And this is the gift of autism for me, is the ability to be completely focused, the ability to work all hours and enjoy it. If I'm focused on something that I enjoy and that I find meaningful, I will go to the ends of the earth. There is literally nothing that will stop me or get in the way. And that is the gift of having this brain, because it allows me to focus deeply. And so being in an office environment where I'm getting interrupted every 2 seconds, I'm working on something that I don't really care about, doing something just for the money does not work for me. I can't do something just for the money. It needs to have meaning. It needs to be something that I'm interested in. So being really out of tune ended up giving me an anxiety disorder. And I was very good at masking and just fitting in, people pleasing. My life would revolve around the weekends, and I would always have different things that I put my all into. And I would go above and beyond in certain areas of my life, depending on the phase I was in. So when I was in the stage of going out every weekend, I would have new outfits every weekend, and I'd spend my weeks planning the party that I was going to be hosting or what I was going to wear. And so I was just so into that for so many years, and it was amazing fun. But I did drink to ease my anxiety, I think, without even realizing it. It's so much easier to just be free and have fun with a big group of people if I was drinking. I also hate small talk, so that doesn't help as well. So drinking definitely helps with that, because I just can't stand it. I'd much rather have a deep, meaningful conversation with one person or a small group rather than a big group and just talking about like small talk stuff. I'm just not really interested. My number one value is freedom as well, and I just like being able to do whatever I want to do. And this can also be an autistic trait. It's called demand avoidance, where you don't want to do as you're told. You need to be independent. You want to do things your own way. So there are multiple traits of autism which can lend itself so well to being a CEO and to doing big things when it's harnessed in the right way. And again, I'm talking about my experience. I'm not talking for other people with autism, because everyone has a different combination of traits. But as a woman with high functioning autism, I know what my traits are. And at the end of my assessment, she said, I'm really impressed by the fact that you are already playing to your strengths. So I've been doing it without realizing. I've gone, okay, that doesn't work for me. So therefore I need to change things and I need to work in this way. And I'd learned by my early 20s that my brain is obsessive. And so I'd been obsessed with a few things that were negative and toxic. I would get addicted to things. If I focused on something, I'd get addicted to it. But I knew it was an actual addiction because my stepdad is an addict. He's sober now, but he's had multiple different addictions through his life. And an addict will destroy everything else in their life to serve their addiction. That was never me. I would get obsessed with things, but I wouldn't let everything else fall into ruin for the sake of what I was obsessed with. So I knew I wasn't an addict, but I was definitely obsessive. And so by my early 20s, I'd learned that about myself, and I'd realized, okay, I have to be really careful what I focus my mind on here. And as I said on Instagram, I don't weigh myself. I don't look at calories or anything like that, because my mind would get obsessed with it. And it's this laser beam, and I have to be really careful what I point it towards, because it is going to go down into the detail. It is going to think about it all day. It is going to make it the best it can possibly be. And so that can be a gift or a massive curse, depending on where it's focused towards. And I'd already learned by my early 20s, a decade before I realized I had autism and got diagnosed, that my brain was like that. And so I started focusing it towards things that could be beneficial. When I was at JP Morgan on the grad scheme, I won Standout Analyst on the grad scheme. So I won an award. Then when I went to do my master's, I won a scholarship and graduated with the top mark in the year. Then through every phase of my career, I would dedicate all of myself, all of my effort into whatever it was I was pursuing, whether it was a book deal or growing my business or getting to the first six figures or getting my first clients or creating content. And I would just use that focus and that dedication, which can come from the autistic brain, and channel it into things that were going to be helpful for me, but also things that provided meaning and a greater sense of purpose. So now I feel like I have really started to master what autism means for me, especially now I'm diagnosed. That for me is just a get out of jail free card to have in my back pocket. A lot of the things that Ali and I would argue about would be autism related, except neither of us knew or had that vocabulary. So he'd say that I'd shut down when we were having a serious conversation, or, you know, kind of like an argument, or that I'd be really sensitive to what I perceived as criticism. If he was trying to tell me how he thought I could improve something, I'd be defensive, because part of autism is rejection sensitivity dysphoria. So being really sensitive to criticism. And all these little pieces that we would argue about, me not communicating properly or not saying how I feel, because in my head I think I am, but it often doesn't show on the outside, or I don't express it as much as I think I am. It's like I think he can be a mind reader. And so it was little things like this that we would argue about that were all related to me having undiagnosed autism. So it's been so helpful in that respect as well. Obviously, when I have children, I'll be able to look out for it in them. And it just means I can advocate for myself. This is what I wanted from the diagnosis, to be able to understand myself and to be able to advocate for myself. So when we do have a wedding, I can excuse myself a few hours earlier than everyone else because I have autism. I can stay in a different place if I need to, because staying with other people is just going to be too overwhelming. And you don't need a diagnosis to be able to do these things. But for me, having that clarity that those are my needs, and also having that in my back pocket to say so that other people understand why I'm different and why it might be fine for them, enjoyable for them, but it's not for me, is so incredibly helpful. And I think having a business where you can work from home on your own, on your special interests that are meaningful and purposeful, is the ultimate hack. And I am so happy that I have got my diagnosis, that I have learned to work with my brain, and that I can use my autism as the wonderful, wonderful gift that it is when I'm working with my brain and advocating for myself. So I hope this has been helpful. I had some incredible messages when I shared on Instagram of people saying they thought they may have it too, people who are going through the diagnosis process, some people who had been diagnosed but were too scared to share it publicly, and so they were really glad that I just came out and said it. And I really hope that this helps more people to understand that autism is different in women. That is my goal in talking about it. I want people to know it's different in women. And maybe talking about it will allow some women to realize that they may have it themselves, and then they can seek a diagnosis if it's right for them. But generally, I just want to educate people on this, because the current stereotype of autism is based on men, and it's completely different for women. And when you understand that you have autism or any other kind of neurodivergence, it allows you to have so much more peace and freedom and compassion for yourself. It allows you to harness your gifts and use them to the best of their capability while living the most in tune life for you. This is like a whole new level of living in tune. And whenever I write my second book, I will definitely be mentioning the autism in there somewhere, because it has been a massive lesson and a massive gift. And I'm so grateful to have this deeper understanding of myself and to be even more peaceful and in tune with who I really am and the brain that I have been given. So I hope this has been helpful for you. If you do want to discuss anything, send me a DM over on Instagram at I Am Liz Roberta. I'm going to be regular with the podcast again, so hit subscribe if you haven't already, and I will see you in the next episode. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so you know when the next one comes out. Reviews really help the Liz Roberta Show, so if you send me a screenshot of your review on the podcast in an Instagram DM at I Am Liz Roberta, I'll give you my Rich in Receiving activation audio to help you break through into your next level of wealth. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today, and I will see you here again, same time, same place, next week.